Well, good morning, everyone. It is hot in here, eh? Amen to that. Hey, it's been a privilege playing with the worship team this week. It feels kind of weird for me because that's what I did in my last role, and it feels weird to not play for like a whole year. And so now I play with them, and it was great. So thank you, worship team, for all the work you do. Thank you, Leah, for leading today. Much appreciated for all the work you do. So we're in the book of Ruth, and I need to summarize what happened last week, all right? So we have ourselves Elimelech and Naomi. Now, Elimelech is on the same level as Boaz because Boaz is a relative of Elimelech. Got to remember that, all right? So Elimelech and Naomi have two sons. The daughters aren't in the picture yet. The daughters can go sit on the pew for a second. They have two sons, and they go, these are all Israelites, they go to Moab. And Moab is a place the Israelites do not think too highly of. While they're in Moab, these two sons marry two women who become their wives. So come on up, ladies. And they're a Moabite woman, which is not too exciting because they're Moabites, all right? All of a sudden, time goes on, and Elimelech dies. So Elimelech, you can go back to your seat. Everybody cries, and everyone's sad, and life goes on. Naomi, she's okay, though, because she still has two sons that can care for her in her old age. Life will go on. But unfortunately, sorry, guys, you boys die, too. Riley and Josh, they die. They go back to their seats. Sorry, guys. Uh-oh. Naomi's in trouble. She doesn't have a husband. She doesn't have sons. Well, what does she do? Well, she hears that back in Israel, things are good, so she decides to go back to Israel with her daughters-in-law. And on her way, she tells them, oh, ladies, go back home to your mother. Orpah agrees, and she goes back home, and she leaves on good terms, and we're sad again because Orpah goes, and poor Naomi, poor Ruth, here they are, mother and daughter-in-law. And here they are back in Israel, and Ruth comes halfway, right in the middle of the stage, and she goes out looking for food because things aren't good. So she needs to find food. So she's hanging out at right there in the center. Yeah, she's getting food from a farm. She's getting the leftovers, whatever the harvesters don't pick out. And it just so happens to be Boaz's field. And we reminded in last week that Boaz is a family redeemer. I told you what that was. And Boaz and Ruth, Boaz and Ruth, they're getting along really well. And we're hoping that they get together and they get married because Boaz could really help these ladies out. And that's where we are. So Ruth, go ahead back to Naomi. And I need the five of you still here for the rest of the message. So, good luck. Here we go. We're going to start it up at chapter 3. We read through the first two chapters, and reading through the second two chapters now. So, chapter 3, and actually, Naomi, you're pretty old, so I'm going to get you a chair. You're so feeble, you can't stand, so. Or you can sit on the stair, whatever you like. That's cool. Ruth, you're young, you don't sit. One day, Naomi said to Ruth, my daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you'll be provided for. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young woman. Tonight, he'll be winnowing barley at the threshing floor. Now, do as I tell you. Take a bath and put on perfume and dress in your nicest clothes. Then go to the threshing floor, but don't let Boaz see you until he has finished eating and drinking. Be sure to notice where he lies down, then go and cover his feet and lie down there. He will tell you what to do. So Naomi, go ahead and point to Boaz and give him a wink. Now, no matter how young or how old you are, it's always generally a good thing to follow the advice of your parents. That being said, though, we don't know the motives of Naomi. I think she may be trying to get Ruth to seduce Boaz. Something risque might be happening here. Regardless, take note how Ruth responds. Ruth says, I will do everything that you say. So she went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. So Ruth, I need you to stand right in the middle of the stage. There, perfect. Okay, now, one question I have, because I'm not a farmer. Maybe there's someone here asking the same question. What is a threshing floor, or what is the threshing floor? A threshing floor is a place where the grain was separated from the wheat. It was usually a place that was outside and it was elevated so that the unwanted chaff would be blown away by the wind. And Boaz would have been here to protect his grain, his barley, whatever it was, and also the way it's turned to thresh. And so it says here in verse 7, after Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he lay down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. So Boaz, I need you to rub your tummy because you're pretty satisfied. Rub your tummy. Give us a great big smile. That's easy for you to do. Can you burp for us? Yeah. Can you stretch? Yeah, now I need you to lie down if you're okay with that. Can you lie down?
I won't be able to get back up again.
Yeah, we'll just sit down if you can. What, need help sitting down?
Yeah, sit on the organ.
Yeah, sit on the organ, sure. Yeah. So let's just pretend Boaz is lying down. Maybe he's in a lazy boy recliner. That's what he's doing. Then Ruth came quietly. And close your eyes, Boaz, because you're sleeping. And actually, you could also use the words, she came in secrecy, stealth mode. And she uncovered his feet, so take off one of his shoes, Ruth. That's good enough. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet. So Boaz looked surprised. Where am I? Who are you? He asked. I'm your servant Ruth, she replied. Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer. And so basically she's asking Boaz to be take her as his wife. The Lord bless you, my daughter, Boaz exclaimed. You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before. For you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman. But while it's true that I am one of your family redeemers, there is another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he is willing to redeem you, very well, let him marry you. But if he is not willing, then surely as the Lord lives, I will redeem you myself. Now lie down here until morning. And so we're left in suspense. What's going to happen? We're hoping that Boaz and Ruth get together, but who knows? Now, the book of Ruth kind of feels like a romance story, like a romance movie. And in every good, maybe every bad, every good one, I don't know, whatever. It seems like in every romance story, there's the other man. The other man that threatens to break apart this special connection that's going to happen. And Graham is the other man. So Graham, I just need to stand up where you're at and smile at the congregation. Anyways, so Graham is a closer relative to Elimelech than Boaz is. So that basically means that Graham has first dibs on Ruth and Naomi, and redeeming the land and these ladies. So he has the first rights. Okay, here we are, verse 14. So Ruth lay at Boaz's feet until the morning, but she got up before it was light enough for people to recognize her. And so both Boaz and Ruth wake up and stand up, if you don't mind. And go ahead and stand up there, Cliff. So Boaz had said, no one must know that a woman was here at the threshing floor. And again, we're reminded that there is something risky happening here. And some would be questioning why a man and a woman would be hanging out at nighttime alone together. Then Boaz said to her, bring your cloak and spread it out. He measured 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and placed it on her back. Then he returned to the town. Then he returned to the town. And then Ruth comes back to Naomi. And Boaz, you can just hang out there. You're good. When Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, what happened, my daughter? Wow. Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her. And she added, he gave me these 6 scoops of barley and said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then Naomi said to her, just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today. Dun, dun, dun. And then we move on to chapter 4, the last chapter of this book. Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Boaz, are you? Here, I'll get you a seat. I'll get you a seat. And the other man needs to grab a seat too. You guys come to the center, come to the top of the stage here. The other man and Boaz are having a conversation. And we're going to put the other man on this side because he represents someone who's closer in relationship to Elimelech. So Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then, the family redeemer he had mentioned came by, the other man. And so Boaz called out to him, "Come over here and sit down, my friend. I want to talk to you." So they sat down together. Then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, he said, "You know Naomi, who came back from Moab. She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. If you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away, because I'm next in line to redeem it after you." So Boaz is anxious to redeem this whole situation. And the other man, by the way, the other man doesn't even have a name. He's just referred to as the other man, or another man, or the man. The man replied, "All right, I'll redeem it." Then Boaz told him, "Of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family." And so it appears as though the other man is going to take Ruth to be his wife, and the special relationship between Boaz and Ruth is going to come to nothing. And we're kind of sad about that, but we're still excited that there's still a redemption that's going to happen. But another page is turned, and the story takes another twist. The other man says, "Then I can't redeem it," the family redeemer replied, "because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land, I cannot do it." And so why was the other man's estate in danger? Well, number one, maybe he didn't want to do it because he felt he couldn't take care of these ladies. I don't know. The other probably real reason was because although he was probably willing to purchase the land if it didn't come with any people, because if he purchased the land, it would be his and his family forever. But if it came with other people, he would purchase the land off of them, and then he would have to give it back to the heirs, the heir that was produced by Ruth. And that would have put his estate in danger. He would have lost a lot of money, and he wasn't really interested in that deal. Now, in those days, it was the custom in Israel for anyone transferring a right of purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal as he said to Boaz, "So go ahead and take your shoe off, Graham." Or the other man, I should say. The other man, "Please give your sandal to Boaz." And he says, "You buy the land." Now Boaz, I need you to stand up and hold up that shoe like it's a trophy. Then Boaz said to the elders and to the crowd standing around, You are witnesses that today I've bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. And with the land I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the family name of her dead husband and to inherit the family property here in his hometown. You are all witnesses today. Then the elders and all the people standing in the gate replied, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, from whom all the nation of Israel descended. May you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of our ancestor Perez, the son of Tamar and Judah." You can put the trophy down now. So Boaz, he's already a good guy. He's already got a good reputation. But man, we are even more impressed with Boaz because he's doing a few notable things. He's buying and managing the land of Elimelech, which is a good thing. just in preparation for an heir to come. And number two, he's also going to marry Ruth and hopefully produce an heir for that land. And he's marrying a deceased man's widow in order to. He's also caring for Naomi and Ruth in the process. So he's caring for two destitute women. So go ahead and sit down, Boaz. And other man, you're out of the picture now. So you can take your shoe back, and you can go sit down, other man. Thank you, other man. Give the other man a hand. That was incredible acting, Graham. Verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth into his home, and she became his wife. So Ruth, come on up into the center of the stage with Boaz, and I'm going to take your chair away, Boaz. And you guys are right in the center of the stage. You guys are now married. Sweet. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant, and she gave birth to a son. You're the son. You're right here. I needed to crawl. I needed to, like, give me an infant position. Perfect. Then the woman of the town said to Naomi, praise the Lord who has now provided a redeemer for your family. You can stand up. May this not you, baby. May the child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age. For he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you and has been better to you than seven sons. And so they sing praises of Ruth. And now Ruth is to be acknowledged too because she pledges her loyalty to her mother-in-law, which she did not have to do. She marries a man much older than her, which she didn't have to do for the sake of the family. And now Ruth's son will inherit and work Naomi's land and be responsible for her well-being. And so we think of Ruth. Wow, what a woman. She's a woman that we think very highly of. And wouldn't it be awesome if believers went the extra mile that Ruth did, and even Boaz? And so Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast, and she cared for him as if he were her own. The neighbor woman said, now at last Naomi has a son again. Notice that this passage refers to Ruth's son as Naomi's son. And they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. So this little baby here is the grandfather of King David. You're still on the ground, bro. Now, my question here is, was Obed raised as if he was Naomi's son? In other words, was he kind of adopted as Naomi's son? I don't really know, but what I do know is that he was Ruth's son, but he was an heir to Elimelech's property, which meant he would have been very, very precious to Naomi. And I know for sure that he was likely very, very spoiled. He had to have been. And so Ruth and Naomi, go ahead and give your baby a hug. Baby, you can stand up. And Ruth and Naomi, give him a great big hug because you just love him so much. All right, everyone, you guys can all sit down. Give him a hand. And Boaz gets his shoe back. Perfect. And then this book closes with a really cool genealogy. Last week I was telling you that, to be honest, when I read through the Bible, I found genealogies very boring because you don't really understand history. You can't even pronounce them. You think, what's the point? But I found this very cool. And I'll explain a few points about this genealogy at the end. So here's the genealogical, this is the genealogical record of their ancestor, Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Amminadab. Amminadab was the father of Nashon. Nashon was the father of Salmon. Now, I don't know how Cliff and Carol Salmon got in there, but I just know there's something fishy about that. Cheesy joke, I know, that's kind of why I got Cliff to be Boaz, because he was the father of Boaz anyways, right? Anyways, Salmon was the father of Boaz. Boaz was the father of Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David. Now, that's King David, that we're referring to. So, a few neat things that about genealogy that I wanted to mention. A salmon. I'm not sure if you know this, Cliff, or not, but a salmon was married to Rahab the prostitute. Okay. Rahab is always listed as a prostitute when she's mentioned in the Bible. In fact, Matthew 1, 5 reminds us of that. So the parents, the mother of Boaz, this great guy we look up to, is the son of a prostitute. Okay. Number two, that means that both Boaz and Ruth are great grandparents to King David. That's kind of cool. They're related to him, and Obed is a grandparent to King David. Also remember, if Ruth is a Moabite, that makes King David part Moabite. Now stay with me for a second. Deuteronomy 23:3 says that no Ammonite or Moabite shall enter the assembly of Yahweh even to the 10th generation. Okay? So they were so despised that if you were a Moabite and you wanted to come to Israel, you had to wait 10 generations to be acceptable to the Israelite people. But David was a fourth generation Moabite. And he becomes the king of Israel. And people, 100%, well, not 100%, but they just embraced King David as a great and awesome king. Next, from King David, he marries Bathsheba after adultery and murder, as a result of the adultery and murder, and Solomon is born. And then through this line of descendants, our Messiah, Jesus, is born. And so Jesus the Messiah comes through a line of prostitutes, Moabites, people on the outside, adulterers, and murderers. Interesting. Interesting facts and truths about genealogy. So what are some truths we can take home from the book of Ruth? Well, first of all, as we consider the genealogy and even the characters in the story, that we need to remember that God uses all sorts of people to fulfill his purposes. He uses all sorts of people to fulfill his purposes. He uses sinners, he uses imperfect people like you and I, and he uses good, godly, loyal people like Boaz and Ruth. And we always need to remember that God is always the hero of these stories. And I hope that that this truth, that if he can use messed up people like these people, I hope that hopefully that's an encouragement that he can use you and I as well. Number two, last week I asked the question, why does bad things happen to good people? And I never really answered it, and I still won't. But why does bad things happen to good people? The neat thing in this story that I find very interesting is that God is always aware of our suffering. No matter what trial you're going through, no matter what you're suffering right now, God is 100% aware of what you're going through. And that may be the only truth we need to know, that God is with us in our difficult circumstance. So whatever your circumstance, take comfort in knowing that God is absolutely aware of what you're going through. Sometimes our stories will turn out like Naomi and Ruth, and sometimes they don't. But God's always with us. Lastly, probably the greatest theme in this book is the theme of redemption. And there's this redemption between Boaz and Ruth and Naomi, but it's really a greater picture of how God has redeemed us through Christ. Galatians 3:13, a beautiful verse that reminds us of this truth, says this: but Christ has rescued. In other words, you can also translate that redeemed or ransomed. But Christ has rescued or redeemed or ransomed us from the curse pronounced by the law. When he was hung on the cross, he took upon himself the curse for our wrongdoing. For it is written in the scriptures, cursed is everyone who is hung on a tree. And so if we were to compare God's story to this story of Ruth, when we were over here and when Naomi and Ruth were destitute, tragedy had hit them, they were in the midst of incredible suffering, that's kind of a mirror image of, not a mirror image, that might represent our sin, when we were lost in sin and darkness. And then all of a sudden, Boaz goes out of his way to redeem these women. And in a similar way, God goes out of his way to send his son Jesus to die on the cross to redeem us from sin and darkness. And then we look back in the story of Ruth, and the people are praising and cheering at the end of the book. And in the same way, we can cheer and we can praise God too for his redemption that he's given us in Christ. And I got to tell you that giving your life to Christ, accepting his forgiveness, believing that he died on the cross and rose again from the grave is the most important thing you can do in all of your existence. And so if you're sitting here today and if you have not been redeemed, if you have not received Christ's forgiveness, I want to encourage you to do that this morning. We have a prayer team that would be happy to talk to you about that at the service, even myself. And you can hang out at the front here, and a prayer team a member from the prayer team can help you. Or I would even love to chat with you as well. I'm going to close off the service, well, not the service, my message, by sharing a special music piece with you. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back on the stage. The song is called Redeemed by a man who goes by the name of Big Daddy Weave.